Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Thursday, January the 29th. Look, I stumbled there. I forgot what date it was. 2015. I do know the year, though. And I'm your host, John Hansen. As we continue in the series, Procurement Unplugged, the three most important questions for 2015. Joining me today are Buyers Meeting Point's Kelly Barner and the founder of Cottrell Research, Jeanette Jones. Now, Barner and Jones have teamed up to write a book titled Supply Market Intelligence for Procurement Professionals. And I have to tell you, they're... Part of my pre-interview process with them is the reason why we came up with this series. Sometimes what I'll do with guests before bringing them on the show is I'll talk with them and get a feel for, you know, what is the contextual relevance of what they're talking about, be it a book, be it a strategy, be it a breaking news story. And as we start to discuss and talk with Kelly and with Jeanette, the dynamics of the discussion, you know, a light bulb went off, and I started to think, wouldn't it be great just to have this raw and unplugged conversation shared with the listening audience? In fact, wouldn't it even be better to do a series of interviews on this kind of a format focused on, again, these three most important questions? Now, if you're just joining us for the first time, these three questions, how they came about, wasn't it in a vacuum or me just sort of contemplating life one sunny afternoon, but was based upon what readers and you, the listeners, but I'm talking about the readers of the Procurement Insights blog, indicated what was the most important issues for them, you know, and citing Robert Hanfield's book and his appearance on this show, talking about the definitive and definite gap between the old generation and new generation procurement professionals and how the older generation has nothing really to pass on to the up-and-coming pros, to the impact of e-commerce and mobile supply chains and wearable technologies. And finally, is there really a difference between public versus private sector practice in terms of what's evolving for the procurement professional? So within these three areas, we interview a series of guests, industry experts like Jeanette and Kelly, and ask them, you know, what they've written about or what they're talking about. How does it really align with what these questions are asking? How does it address these questions? How does it solve them or answer them? Whatever way you prefer. Anyway, nonetheless, it was very, very interesting. So really what you're going to be listening to today is the very first unedited edition or version of the Unplugged series. So let's just tune in now and you know what? I think you'll enjoy the ride, so to speak.
Kelly and Jeanette, hi.
Hey,
hi. You know what? I just realized I did a typo. My fingers. I only had one cup of coffee today, and instead of 3-4, it came out 3-5. But it's great to connect, and you know, I was glad the studio is free today. So anyway, great to talk with you.
Yes, thank you for setting up this alternative.
Well, you know what? Sometimes, and Skype, you know what that's like. Sometimes you love it,
yeah,
and then you hate it. In fact, I had a call this morning on it with India, and it dropped about 3 or 4 times. So, but it's free. It's free international calls. So, from what I understand, you know what? Saving a few dollars is not a bad thing in light of a few drops here and there. Anyway, I wanted to touch on a couple of things in terms of your book because I wanted to be able to stand out in terms of what we're talking about. And I looked at this and I said, okay, what are some of the key areas to provide some contextual relevance for the for listeners? You know, I mean, supply market intelligence for procurement professionals, research, process, and resources. And you know that people will look at the title and they'll judge whether or not they want to read it by the title, and they may read a couple of pages. And I thought, wouldn't it be a great idea to talk about your book in the context of three areas? And I'm thinking of this. Hanfield, Robert Hanfield, who I interviewed in November. I don't know if you remember that one, Kelly. He talked about the fact that there is going to be a gap between the old-time procurement professionals and the new-time professionals, or the next generation, where there is literally going to be no real sharing of expertise, that what was learned beforehand is no longer relevant with the next generation coming up, and that unlike generations past, there isn't really much that can be gained from that. So I wanted to talk about the book in terms of that context and get a few thoughts of you from you on that today. I want to talk about the fact that the emergence of e-commerce and the mobile supply chain, people are talking and looking at that and saying, okay, we're now the lines between B2B and B2C are going away. We're mobile. We have e-commerce world. We're moving away from the generational understanding of ERP platforms into the postmodern. Remember, I think that was what Gardner called the postmodern ERP era.
Yeah.
What does this book mean in the context of that? And then finally, public versus private sector takeaway. I mean, is the line between the public and private sector in the context of this book as hard and fast as it is? So those are things that I want to take away from today's discussion very briefly. So let's talk about what do you think about the book in relation to what Hanfield said, that there is a definitive and definite chasm between the old and new generations.
So I think, and Jeanette, I don't know if you had a chance. It's another Blog Talk Radio interview that John's actually referring to, and we can send you the link to that. But it's loosely based on his most recent book that he wrote with Gerard Chick. And so he's talking, and John, correct me if I've missed some of the details. He's talking about the fact that, yes, procurement as a function and what is expected of it are evolving, but there may be a point at which people that were around at the beginning are no longer appropriate to be carried forward. Is that sort of the evolution idea that you're talking about?
That's the spirit. What he's saying is basically is old-timers, I guess I'd be one of them, but old-timers are generally speaking out of touch with where the industry is headed. And I asked him the question point blank with his book, which is Procurement's Value Proposition, is, well, then who does this book address? Is it the older generation who'll be gone? And we're not talking about retirement or attrition. We're talking about the fact that it's gone literally as if any footprints that existed prior to this transformation or evolutionary period will be much like, you know, sand at high tide. There won't be any relevancy from what's gone on before. And that was the whole key. And what was interesting is his position was that, at least from his book standpoint, it's really only going to hold relevancy for the next and new generations. Some in the old generation may adapt, but by and large, that will be the minority as opposed to the majority.
So my own personal take on this is that it's very similar to the whole boomer millennial discussion that's happening now. And I think some of it is just simply reflecting the natural cycle of things. You know, that as one generation goes out and as another one comes in, you're going to see some changes. But obviously at the same time, albeit on a different timeline, procurement as a profession is going through some changes. So I think where our book comes into this is, let's face it, at this point, boomers are probably not going to be spending a whole lot of time building their skills in internet research. And for millennials that are coming in, I think an emphasis in this sort of an area actually serves as a draw. It's very current. It's very in the moment. It allows them to leverage a lot of the tools that either they've completely grown up with or that they make use of in their personal lives and they enjoy. But I think that there's another piece to it, which is actually where the book has more relevance. And that's around the enormous sort of middle child group, John, that I referred to in the past, that I totally consider myself a part of, and that has a tendency to kind of get left out where these discussions are concerned. And I think...
Sorry to interrupt, and Jeanette, certainly join in, but what we're saying is those people who are the now generation, because, you know, internet and utilizing it and Googling and all these things are already second nature to them, there's not going to be as much of an appeal as there will be with the millennials coming up who will need that guidance, who will need that direction. But we're not talking about in general terms, but in the terms of for example, the procurement profession. You know, how do you leverage the internet, where the current generation has had to find their way and create new paths? The next millennials will want to come up and actually be perfecting the utilization and internet research process and resources, while the let's call them the traditionalists, in many instances, may use this book as a survival guide almost. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah.
It's certainly a means to say, you know, holy cow, my days are numbered. Is there a book that can help save my job and my career? Because I'm not quite ready to retire yet. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. So let me, and so I'll say one last thing, and then, Jeanette, you should definitely weigh in on this. I think it's the difference between, for a person in my perspective, this book gives them a way to not only secure their career, but improve the trajectory of it. You show yourself as a leader. You show yourself as knowledgeable in categories and industries. And so it gives you an opportunity to step into a leadership position. For a person that's earlier in their career, it gives you an opportunity to take the very basic and raw skills or knowledge that you have and hone them, shape them down into something more formal or that's more appropriate in a corporate environment.
Right. Okay. Okay, Jeanette, would you concur with that?
What I do have to say, and I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, I know I'm going to sound it, there is this element, though, of students, college students, and those entering the profession that are, they have horrible research skills, plagiarism, copying and pasting, using Google as an only search tool. And this is definitely, the skills have gone down greatly, and it's a concern in academia. I do know that. So, yes, the millennials are the ones to grasp this. They're not going to be, I think the term might be afraid. I think the old-timers are going to be fearful, anything really new like this. One thing the millennials will not do, they won't be fearful of it. They'll charge forward, but there's some skill training that's really lacking as far as having the graduates come out and be ready to even kind of have critical thinking skills as well. So there's that one little component that probably needs to be looked at.
Well, you know, it's an interesting point. A few months ago, I interviewed a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Tumlin, who wrote a book called Stop Talking and Start Communicating. And what he was talking about is that the more connected we become via the internet, via social networking groups, the less ability we have to actually communicate, sort of alluding to what you were talking about. You know, a Google search doesn't imply an understanding of the subject matter. I won't say it encourages plagiarism, but what it does do for most is it makes information so easily accessible that are we really understanding that information any better? So what you're saying with your book is that ultimately access to information is not knowledge of that information,
yes,
subject matter.
Yes.
And so the book is designed to create the proper protocol, the techniques to actually extract knowledge, not just data, not just information. I mean, is that a good way to put it?
I think it's very, yes, exactly. Kelly, what do you think?
I think it is. And one of the things, and John, this might actually be another or an alternate contextual possibility that I know I would actually selfishly like to hear Jeanette talk about. So one of the rigors that Jeanette brought to this book, and actually this is something she and I haven't talked about, that I had kind of a renewed respect for and re-understood the importance of, were the disciplines around not only things like quality assurance and quality control around, you know, validating the perspective of the person writing and making sure that you actually have factual information, but also the discipline of, going back to your shifting sands idea, information on the internet has such a way of being transitory that I think we all just go, oh, well, I bookmarked it so I can find it again, or I have a link saved someplace in some kind of Dropbox thing. I think in going through the process, the way I've clearly gotten further from my library science roots than I realized, seeing again information through the lens of Jeanette's more focused perspective, the way we cited sources, the way things were documented. It is something that's important because as information becomes more accessible, it also becomes harder to hold on to because there's so much more of it. And yet huge business decisions are being based on this research,
mm-hmm.
and yet
yeah.
a link or some other kind of information could easily go dead or disappear in the 3 months between when procurement uses it to justify a decision and when a business case has to be presented to the executive team, and that's terrifying.
So in essence,
yeah, exactly.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead, Jeanette.
No, I was just agreeing, John.
Okay. So in reality, it is safe to say that the ubiquitous appeal of the book itself is that regardless of what your starting point may be, or at what point you're starting, whether you're at the end, nearing the end of the career, at the beginning of the career, or really just a couple of years into it, one of these top 30 under 30, the fact remains is that the book is designed to create a standard or a level of research excellence or practice that will be useful to each area or each generation. I mean, that's really what I'm taking away from this.
Yeah, and I think
yes.
the ways that everybody interacts with it is going to be very different. And I would say maybe the most different interaction point is between the book and people that really are senior level. You know, they are not going to go learn these skills. They are not going to be, you know, doing the research work. And yet, they have a very important role in this because as they are directing a team, which could potentially be global and very large and virtual, one of the most important points we've set aside in the intelligence creation process is what we've called an internal approval hurdle. And it's a moment when everything has to stop. The collection has to stop, the analysis has to stop, and the documentation has to stop. And it's that person sitting at the very top of the procurement heap that has to look at the work that's been done, the conclusions and recommendations drawn from it, and the way it's presented, and improve it if they can, highlight problems if they need to, but then sign off on it before the effort goes any further. And that's an incredibly important decision point in the process.
Okay, now see, this sort of segues into the next thing, the emergence of e-commerce and the mobile supply chain. And here's how I'm thinking of this, because everything comes to a halt. You know, in often cases, and maybe dating myself even more than you, in the old days of dog-eared catalogs, a buyer's supply list and knowledge was almost as important to that individual as Colonel Sanders' secret recipe. There was no sharing. There was no automation of the process. There was nothing. Now, when we look at research process and resources, and in the context of what you just said, Kelly, I mean, there are certain elements of what we're moving towards, technologically speaking, that do automate that and level the playing field to a certain degree. Within the context of the technological advances and looking at in the practical execution of duties, the actual buying of, and selling of goods and services, I mean, will this book have a role to play in that regard?
The way I look at it, Kelly, I'm almost trying to tie in with what John is saying in your very first section when you talk about the difference between intelligence and information and why the view of the procurement professional is so incredibly important in determining the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Are you following me?
I am, yeah. So, I mean, part of it is that, and funny, there's like just on the edge of my mind, there's a quote that I just read somewhere. I'll have to go back and pull it and have it in front of me. But basically, that without subjectivity and risk, there is no opportunity for competitive advantage. So that's sort of the one piece, that if you really want to do something spectacular, and let's face it, to keep procurement strategic, we need to start taking risks and doing something spectacular. We have to wade right into the gray area and start making the most of what we can. So that's kind of one piece of it. But the other piece is actionability. So it doesn't mean anything. There is no intelligence until something has been done based upon the information or the knowledge that procurement has put in front of some decision maker. And even when the action is to literally disregard what procurement has recommended, it's still a conscious decision being made as a result or in reaction to the work that procurement has done and the intelligence that's been created.
Okay, well, Wei-Zhen, now this is an interesting point because there's two elements to what you just talked about. Number one is scalability. And when I think in terms of scalability of expertise and knowledge, if that knowledge is in the hands of individuals as opposed to automation, scalability is going to be a challenge because not all procurement professionals, just like not all doctors and lawyers and dentists and whatnot, are created the same. So where now this leads into the second part of the issue is with technology. In the past, the belief was if you automate it, it'll improve it, where we found out with 80-90% of all initiatives failing that, you know, you could not take a bad process, existing process, and by merely or simply automating it, make the whole exercise better. But looking at this next generational evolution of technology, it would seem that there is a greater emphasis put on relationships, a greater emphasis put on the involvement of people and the foundations that are laid for that automation. In other words, technology is still important, but it's not the star of the process. If that is the case, and that chain of thought is indeed accurate, are we still not in the position of struggling with the scalability of expertise? And is that another area where this book is designed to address? Is it going to level the playing field, not just in the matter of process of research, but being able to understand and apply that information in a practical sense? I mean, can it take individuals in Company A and individuals in Company B, despite their disparate backgrounds and expertise and their view of the world, can it create a standard by which makes it a practice that is scalable across the broader industry?
So I think to that, my very simple answer is yes. It can standardize and create a process that people in two very different companies can follow out with sort of equal thoroughness. My real answer is no, and I think it's deliberate, that this is not ultimately a process that you want to be scalable. You know, I think about the trap we built for ourselves when we wrapped ourselves in the strategic sourcing process. Is it just the act of thinking of it as a multi-step process where we follow the steps? We stripped all of the strategy out of it. At that point, it is no longer strategic. I think
broadly,
this is applicable. Yeah.
This is a vacuum or a void. I mean, we're talking about the companies now being truly different from the ERP providers of the past in terms of e-procurement and having an intuitively responsive technological platform, having mobility, mobile access, you know, zettabytes and wearable technology and all of this. But the reality is, of course, is that instead of making technology the star, it's saying that the technology has to enhance the expertise of the individuals and the accessibility it provides and to information is the key. The book then, in theory, should be able to equip procurement professionals, regardless of their background, with the ability to leverage this emerging technology to its fullest potential. If it can't, and I see where you're going with this, it's an interesting thought process, is that, you know, in theory or in practice, sure it could. But in reality, what you're saying is no matter how much we evolve as an industry or a profession, the reality is there's going to be good procurement people and bad procurement people, and no matter how good of a book you have, it isn't going to change it.
And I think truthfully, long term, however long that term happens to be, my personal opinion is that big, huge procurement teams are going away. I think the vast majority of spend is going to be outsourced or handled transactionally by third parties. And I think that leading procurement organizations are going to be down to these, you know, we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the sort of future buy thing, SWAT team, black ops style very small, very fast, very light, addressing multiple categories, not dedicated to any. It's literally about having the right team with the right skills makeup. And in that kind of a scenario, you don't want someone following a process. You want them to learn the process and internalize it, but then it's more about sticking to the core values of what the process initially stood for than it is about following steps.
Okay, so the interesting, Jeanette, I mean, this is a thought relative to yourself there, is that we're now addressing the elephant in the room or gorilla in the room, whatever your animal preference might be. But the reality is, and this goes to what Hanfield said, is and in fact, when I chaired or rather moderated a panel discussion with Kate Vitasek and Tim Cummins, amongst others, in Virginia, is that there were predictions through Aberdeen brought forward by Tim that 47% of all procurement professionals are going to be redundant. I mean, this speaks to what you're talking about. I mean, the number has been as high as 80. But if you then are looking at the profession and the compression of headcount, let's call it that, compression of headcount within an enterprise, then you have a much better chance of using a hockey analogy, some say the game was much more skilled and better played when there were only six NHL teams versus 30 or 32 or whatever number there are now. I mean, the reality is that you're only going to get the cream of the crop in this profession. I mean, is that really the natural governing process, Jeanette?
Yeah, I got to be honest. This is kind of out of my area. I guess I'd have to say yes. I don't really have anything to comment on that, to be honest, John. I think Kelly said pretty much what I was thinking.
So in essence, this book, sorry to interrupt, but this book acts as both a valuable tool and a warning message, and we go back to that survival guide, is now we're in the race for a limited number of positions, and only the best will the best will come out on top. And part of that evolution or part of that race, winning that race, is possessing these research skills, the process, the resources, possessing these kinds of skills that transforms information into knowledge, that transforms capability into outcome. I mean, that's really what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
It is. And
okay.
I think, and I know we're down to our last couple of minutes, and we can certainly circle up and prep before we actually do the interview, but my own opinion is Jeanette is far more likely to actually be a direct member of the procurement team of the future than the majority of procurement professionals practicing today.
And okay, so the reality, though, and let's look at it from the standpoint of book sales, because then I want to go into just finally public versus private sector. The reality is that everyone should buy this book because we don't know who's going to come out on top. It's like they say, you know, that's why they play the game, because, you know, the experts and the odds makers and everything have one thing figured out, but until you actually get out in the field to play and play it, you don't know what the outcome is going to be. What this book is really doing is it's, and I guess the light bulbs are appropriate on the cover, is it's flashing a warning light saying, get the book, read, and learn where the direction of the industry is going, and find out how you can carve your own place because there's only a limited number of seats. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
But it's also a gap between what a lot of procurement professionals are being told or led to believe about themselves versus what they're actually capable. And I think that the main gist of the book is very positive in that, yes, times may be tough right now and competition may be increasing as we move forward. But today, the only thing standing between you and building this capability is you pausing before opening the book to get started. That it's totally doable.
Okay, so let's ask this, because I know, Jeanette, you have to run. Public versus private sector, you know, and it was interesting because I asked this very same question again at that same panel discussion. And some instances said, well, no, there's not really a difference between the two. Yet in other areas of the board or the panel and those in the audience, there are a distinct difference between the two. in terms of the public versus private sector, how should this book be viewed?
Well, great, great question. And I'm just going to confess right here now, I'm looking at it as more of a corporate. My viewpoint truly was more on the corporate view. I think if Kelly and I were to tackle this, to be honest, if I was writing it for the public, I'd do it differently. I really would. In my mind, thinking this is more for organizations and corporations, more with the innovative thought, innovative thinking. So it's interesting you bring that up because there's a lot of government information that we list as resources, and it's actually some of it is quite excellent. But I do know, researching in the corporate world, the government information was kind of like, okay, well, that's kind of a backup. Now it's gotten better. But in my mind, to be honest, I'm viewing this more as a book for corporate. Kelly, what's your take? I don't even think we've talked about this. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think my take on it is that until the public sector has a reason to be as competitive as the private sector, they're not going to care about stuff like this. What I think where this gets really interesting, and this actually, Jeanette, comes back to you, is actually the difference between public and private sector information. And
yeah.
So there's like the government sources that you talked about, but there's also private or commercial publicly available data versus private or commercial sector fee-for-use information. And so I think that's another way of looking at that public versus private split on the information side that maybe lines up better with what's actually in the book.
Yeah.
So the whole element of this is that it still seems to be geared towards really what you'd call the private sector for the reasons that Jeanette talked about. Yet as governments begin to evolve themselves, and we're not talking about the NPM, the new public management mindset and philosophy that everyone jumped to in the late 90s, assuming that government has to be more like the private sector because the private sector had somehow figured it all out, which they hadn't. There's a generalized realization is that the results that have to be provided have to be more tangible and meaningful, regardless of what those target goals are. And with the public sector, it's, of course, serving the citizens of a particular city or community, where the private sector serves its client base. But nonetheless, both are equally important. Is there not a point in time where, as the public sector evolves in terms of its focus from just get the lowest price and beat up suppliers, which it seems to be moving towards, and setting mm-hmm. the Kate's example of the bridge in Minnesota that was built in record time.
Yeah.
Is this not something that's going to be coming into play here? Because if you look at the Minnesota bridge example, they bypassed all of the traditional procurement practices associated with government buying to get the job done. And that meant the reallocation of risk. That meant the research into something that had never been done before. It even included down to the minuscule, and if you could call it that, way in which the bridge would be constructed to honor those that did lose their life in the tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that requires research process and resources in a completely different way. I mean, has the government moved towards more of those kind of relational transactions or buys, isn't this book going to carry more weight in that regard, especially with the public sector procurement professionals who again, traditionally have been, nothing more than what CPO Agenda Roundtable called everyday run-of-the-mill average buyers?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the fact of the matter is, at this point, a truly collaborative, innovative sourcing procurement projects of any kind, public or private sector, is so unusual that I think both sectors have an equal shot at making it happen. But the pressure is going to increase to make it happen more frequently. My guess would be that the private sector is going to end up making progress faster. But I think it requires that everyone be equally informed. And so you can't be depending on your suppliers for information if they're going to be true partners. You need to be every bit as informed as they are. And again, that's where the research comes back in. You need to know as much, if not more, than they know.
And that, Jeanette, before we let you go, because it's 3:04, it goes to the heart of what you were talking about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, those three, within the context of those three things, I think this the discussion is interesting. I mean, I see what I wanted to do is everyone, when they talk about a book, they focus on the book within the confines of its pages and talk about what's there. What I like to do, and I think what audiences like to hear, is go outside of the book's pages. Where does it apply in a practical sense? And these are the three key areas that are trending and showing an increased trending in 2015. So, the framing, and I guess that would be the best way to say it, framing the book's contents and its insights within these three points, I think, creates an awareness as to how it can help the listener and ultimately the reader.
Okay. Awesome. Great. Well, thank you, John. You put us through our paces.
All right. Well, listen, we'll be in touch over the next day or so. Jeanette, thank you. It's good to finally talk with you. And Kelly, we'll talk soon.
Thank you
very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So there you have it, an off-the-cuff conversation that certainly Kelly and Jeanette were not initially aware would ultimately end up being broadcast to an audience of listeners. However, the fact that they agreed to have it aired is certainly a reflection of their desire to provide insights and meaningful perspective in relation to not only their new book, Supply Market Intelligence for Procurement Professionals, but their respect for the industry and really trying to add value to procurement professionals everywhere. Now, again, I want to remind everybody, Procurement Unplugged, it will continue as a series. I will assure you that, of course, unlike this particular episode, which ultimately became the first episode, I guess you could call it the pilot in that regard, became the first episode. All other interviews, of course, are live, and so we won't be listening to a recording of them. But nonetheless, I thought it was a great starting point for what is turning out to be a wonderful series. Now, stay tuned and keep posted through the Procurement Insights blog for upcoming Unplugged or Procurement Unplugged guests. We will continue to delve into these. And, of course, if you have questions, remember, these are the three questions that I've spotted through Procurement Insights as being key, but maybe there's another question or two. I encourage you to share that. You can do so in the comment stream associated with this particular segment or drop by the Procurement Insights blog, but share a question that you'd like to have answered, and we will do our very best to incorporate that into these discussions. So until we come at you over these virtual airwaves, over the Blog Talk Radio Network, as always, I remain your host, John Hansen, and wish you a very, very good week. Bye for now.